Hello and welcome to our wrap-up episode of Dark Heresy. Whether you're just joining us or you've suffered through the previous 38 episodes, welcome. What I thought we'd do, I've got, I think, four of my favourite players here, maybe. What I thought we'd do is just have a big dumb chat about the campaign, answer a few questions that people have sent in, and then we'll have a talk about what we're doing next. So my question for you beautiful people, did you have fun?
Sorry, just very quickly before we begin, I'd like to raise a formal protest.
Okay.
We here at Occupod Studios are being censored. This is the second time Warwick has started this recording in the last 10 minutes.
Because some people...
He didn't like the content that was being discussed.
Some people had a case of the sillies.
Doesn't want to ask and be asked the hard questions.
That is...
He just called me handsome, but he does not care about my face.
You are fake news, both of you, what you're doing here. This is slander. But I'm going to take that as a, no, we didn't have fun, we're here out of spite, which I think is the attitude that we've been carrying this God-fearing podcast with for 38 episodes. That is true, yeah. You guys are my money makers. That's where it's all coming from. So I thought I'd start off with some dumb reveals. So I mentioned to you guys off mic, but Yertano Butrell was Yert, the trader on Al-Jadar, who after losing his son in the Great Hunt decided to basically retire and fuck off to the desert planet. Another dumb reveal, which I think is probably going to be heartbreaking for you, Og. Do you remember the whole thing about the drive-through Fudderux on Al-Jadar?
Yes, on Al-Jadar.
So do you ever remember one of the random events that you rolled for? You found a strange metal thing standing upright in the desert.
was it the order window for a drive-through Fudderux?
My brother in the Omnissiah, that was the sign to tell you where the Fudderux drive-through was. It was like 2 miles in this direction. If you would have successfully climbed it, brushed off the sand, but you were unable to do so, so that mystery is now lost to the desert.
Yeah,
who knows what secrets are there? Yes, that was heartbreaking for me to kind of sit there being like, oh man, I really hope you do these roles right, and then you just left, which was sad. But you know, that's Dark Heresy. It can't all be winners. The main reason I'm doing this as well is because I have to actively stop doing something as a GM where I, after a session, go, oh, good session guys, but if you would have gone in this door, this thing would have happened, because I want you guys to actually do it in character and know if you're curious about what's in that door, you have to open the door as Lothar and get your legs blown off. Otherwise, you know, where's the fun in it? It's like playing with a quick save.
It's fun though, kind of, if it's completely like not gonna happen.
I mean, if we've seen how I GM, I will turn the smallest of joke or reference into a character later on in the series.
Kind of what I've been doing with Strangerville.
Exactly. Fudderux. have you guys got any questions for me?
Yeah.
Benevolent GM. Hit me up.
Who do you think
is
you are?
Quintus alive?
Quintus is dead. I've got some bad news about him. Yeah, he was tragically assassinated.
Wife's name.
Did they assassinate the child?
Let me roll the die. Let me toss a Games Workshop 32mm base to the side. whether the child is dead. Heads, he's alive. I've got some bad news. Tails, he's dead. You did it, Og. Congratulations, that child was killed.
I really like Tora had a very compelling argument about why it needed to happen.
Yeah.
And then when Lane disagreed, Tora then proceeded to ace a sleight of hand check to take the data pad and put the description of the guy there anyway.
And I think, you know, as much as I like running the game, I think this is very much a story that is in your hands. And, you know, who am I to stop you from murdering a child? So, any more questions?
Gorm Gormson's body already off planet when Tora went for his misadventures to find it?
Yes.
Fuck.
Yeah. Basically, you grabbed Carradine Gormson. Well, Carradine Gormson's body was given off to the scholar, and then pretty much immediately a shuttle came to take him away. He was gonzo. He was off back to the... hey, fun fact, when we did that session the Leagues of Atan weren't announced, so that was, you know, ancient squat law was what we were playing with then.
Yeah, exactly.
And look at us now. Look at us now.
Look at us now.
Next, you'll have like the Eichthyr toilet kin or something, and you know, you've got me to thank for that, dear listener.
I guess the commander for that army box I have is going to have to be him.
Oh,
be
no. Him now. he's turned into like one of the Iron Kid things. He's just, you know, taken his soul and so that he can continue plumbing in the future. So I've got a few questions for the listeners. These were all sent in via Spotify system. So if you'd like to send in a question about the game, it's too late. You missed your chance. If you sent in a question that was basically just, I really enjoyed the poddy, thanks. I'm not going to read those out because... you know, it's quite masturbatory. I don't really want to put people through that. You've listened to 38 episodes of my voice. That's the masturbatorium already.
We hated it the whole way through.
Yay! So I've edited a few of these out as well, because if you sent a question early on, it might have, like, one of the questions was like, is Willem traveling through time backwards? Yes. But that was answered in game. I also realized I haven't put names with these.
Who figured that out before the end? It didn't feel like that to me.
I've not written down names for these people, so I'm going to assume that all our largest demographic, which I think is still the German listeners. Yeah, so well, I mean, all of these were sent in...
Like backwards through time, just the fact that he was like... I don't know. I was almost getting this idea of like... Somehow he maybe even precognition or something, like, made these little, like, moments in time to pop up.
I mean, so, what happened with Willem was that he was traveling, I mean, you saw it with the ring, he basically went back in time to every time he shed blood. So, that's what he was experiencing. That. Yeah.
I mean, so, did his stuck us, though,
I don't know, it just didn't feel like backwards, I guess.
That's fair. I've never read Homestuck because I'm not a degenerate. I'm a good, honest person.
Yeah, but you watched Doctor Who. The main plot.
I have heard of Doctor Who, yes. Yeah.
I once compared you to Stephen Moffat and you were very offended.
Yeah, I know enough about Doctor Who to know that's an insult. So this first question I'm going to say is from Hans Gruber, who has asked... who were the Burnt Kings on Al Jadar? Was it a tomb world? Really good question. No, it wasn't. I thought doubling up on two Necron tomb worlds might be a bit spicy. The Burnt Kings on Al Jadar that were referenced a few times, how I kind of had it, was it was a dark age of technology civilization, which then regressed back into sort of the old night. There was something I really wanted to do with Al Jadar, where it's kind of in this endless cycle of... Because it's such a backwater shit. Well, there's no water there anyway. It's a dry shithole. This constant thing of like, there is some ancient technology here, which is then venerated by the people who've come afterwards. So you've seen it with Al Jadar tribes, with Fresh Grenadiers, with the troop ship exploding. And before then, you had the Burnt Kings, who were then worshipped or worshipping this previous civilization. So... depending on the roles you did during the desert stuff and depending on which route you took into the fortress at the end of it, there was a potential you could have actually gone into some of their catacombs and there would have been some very old plasma technology there, which could have been interesting. Part of me is like, maybe I should have added more opportunities for that because that would have been nice for you guys to play around with. But yeah, that's rock and roll. You know, sometimes you don't choose the options. That's what this session's for. There was another couple of things I really liked with the Al Jadar desert random events thing. There was like two little interconnected things that you might have rolled for. One of which was a crashed shuttle, which had, I can't remember if he was alive or not, but it had the body of a nobleman in there. It was one of the people who were on their way to the Pleasure Dome to, you know, get their pleasure in the Pleasure Dome. But there was also, I think, the potential of like someone could have salvaged the apart from it, and you could have been like, hey, well, clearly this isn't from Al Jadar, and clearly this woman isn't from Al Jadar, who, you know, that would have led on to other stuff. So this next question is again from Hans Gruber. So this is for you, Critter.
Wow.
why didn't you play one of the bigger cannon guard regiments? Would have been interesting to see a Kriegsman or Cadian in the Inquisition. Which is a bit presumptive,
I agree. I like this question because it says, why was your character not more interesting? Well, I'll tell you.
You know what is the best piece of lore about a guard regiment? It's all about the Cadians. Who even is Tanith's first?
Who cares about those guys? I'd never read a book on those fuckers.
I'd never read a book.
Mostly because self-inserts are all I know. And second, at the time I was reading through all of the Gaunt's Ghosts there. And that's really kind of where the basis for the character came from. Not so much the canon side of it. Yeah, seriously. honest to goodness, I was trying to do like a ranger like kind of deal from not necessarily Tanith, but I was like, because that'd be a little too on the nose. And
there's loads of guard regiments which are light infantry.
God help me if I got it wrong. So
I figured,
is that a Zoidberg snail?
It is a Zoidberg snail.
We're drawing at the same time as we're talking, by the way.
Are you in Roll 20?
Yes.
No.
I'm not. hang on. Right, so this is the kids are next door. They've gotten out the playmat. And Dad's coming home. Let me see what you... Stop you sniggering. You're not going to have any lunch. my hands are moving to my belt buckle. That's when you know to stop. Let me open up Dark Heresy and Roll 20.
Back to me in the ring.
What are you boys doing on my... Oh, you've drawn a penis and turned it into a bird. You've drawn a lovely mural of 9/11 and a Zoidberg snail. The Windows logo, and who's that cheeky fella? It's a bold man with the caption of Warwick's Airlines circa 2024. So I'm glad that you guys are treating the final episode with the reverence it deserves.
Wait. I need to forget about that. I don't know who wrote that last one, but that is completely not correct. That is
you're just graffitiing now.
Well, they're graffitiing. That's the long and short of it. That's why I went with a custom regiment, a homebrew, I should say.
But it wasn't part of the lore, Critter.
No, you're absolutely right. It wasn't part of the lore, but also
there we go. That's...
Inquisition pulls from everywhere. So
that's true. Yeah, thanks. The hairline has now been amended to say 2001, when I was 5 years old.
I'd like to point out how quick and good my cover-up job was, because if you notice the shape on the inside of this Windows logo...
Thank you very much for that. I'm not going to bother expanding that, but just visualise a Windows logo and what it could be in your head.
Windows logo, not the newer ones.
Yeah, so this next question is for Og, I presume. Why is Torah named after a Jewish religious text?
So
that's honestly so funny.
my original proposal for the character name was first name Torah, last name Highmane, like Agent Highmane. He was going to be a little bit more like put together, like not an assassin, not of the Assassinatoriums, but a put together high gun killer. And I eventually got Warwick to agree that it was going to be called Torah, last name Hymane, because if you say it as one word, it says Torah Hymen. And that was then very quickly figured out,
you
and I got told,
genius motherfucker.
I got told I couldn't do that, so we took Saxton Hale's last name from.
Australian national hero, yeah. He's right up there with Ned Kelly, Steve Irwin, and that Prime Minister who just walked into the sea.
And, yeah, Harold Holt.
Exactly.
He didn't walk into the sea, he was swimming, and then he drowned. And
how did he start swimming, cunt? What do you have to do first?
What is swimming,
in.
But...
Diving.
Fuck off.
Yeah, diving.
What is swimming but three-dimensional walking? Oh.
So I think that's a good answer, and I think that's a good summary as well of how Og makes characters, which is, ha ha ha, I'm going to make a funny joke character, and then 3 months later goes, oh no, I'm actually quite attached to this character from the backstory.
Was your man rich? Was the President Pierre Man rich when he died? I mean, disappeared.
Harold Shipman.
Harold Holt.
Holt. Who's Harold Shipman?
How do we know he's not in
the? Oh God, Harold Shipman. Harold Shipman is a British serial killer.
Oh no! I don't know. I'm assuming he was wealthy. Very, very rarely do you become a powerful politician like that without a bit of money.
He might be in Mark One Titan.
It could have.
He could have been looking at the first trip to the Great Barrier Reef there, or whatever.
That's actually what happened. That's the great conspiracy. That's what the Titan submarine disaster was actually about.
Oh no, you're really dating.
It's the second reimagining after Harold Holt went missing in the ocean.
Yeah.
Clearly he was looking for the Titanic.
Exactly. He was a few oceans away.
Oh no, it's happening again.
Start somewhere.
So this next question is for Raph, and it was sent in by a fella called Hans. So why did you choose to play a priest in the Ordo Xenos?
Oh, great question. First of all, the first answer is officially, if you read the lore, which I know my DM never did.
How dare you?
He was Ordo Malleus on loan.
We refer to it as like an exchange student program. We did reference the idea that there is some poor guy from the Ordo Xenos who is currently fighting demons and having a miserable time.
Right in the middle of the corn underworld or whatever.
Yeah.
He's probably some scribe or something that. Like, he's a real book. He's a real book.
Lane just fucking found someone in the back, was like, off you go, cunt. And sent him off to the Iotera. Yeah.
He's going to be an admin for the rest of his life. Nah.
Off to the Iotera, big man.
I find these questions interesting just because it's like, I don't think anyone really gave thought to that specific part of their character.
No, but that's the kind of autism we're dealing here.
User entered your
channel. Hello.
Tora. Hello. Does Judaism exist in the 41st millennium?
No. There's some vague references to Christianity with Lanius Pius, but that's about it.
Lanius Pius climbed the Tower of Babel with the Emperor.
Well, yeah, but he's referenced as being Catholic, I think, in some things.
But I believe if the Emperor is canonically Jesus, it means him and his followers were Jewish at the time.
Or Judas.
Read a Siege of Terror book one time, Warwick.
I'm not. I refuse to engage with this media more than I already have, I say, as I shake some of my Warhammer paints. So I think that's a fair question with the why priest. I think, like, lore-wise as well, from Lane's perspective, he can deal with the Xenos stuff. It's everything outside of that which is not good for him to deal with. So, like, he doesn't really give a shit about the Hereticus stuff. He's not fighting internal enemies a huge amount of time. But I think the idea of anything demonic immediately sets off Lane's alarm bells. He is not equipped to deal with it. So having a 7-foot tall... Having a 7-foot tall bold man to just throw in and wrestle some demons is a useful thing for him.
And play golf with afterwards.
You know, it's a business and a pleasure thing.
To be fair, though, like, to give that a proper answer, though, dear Hans, you may have picked up, I'm a very one-dimensional human being, and I thought it'd be really cool to play a melee-based tough guy that could get away with whatever he wanted by saying the words the Emperor protects. Yeah. Which is more or less my first 8 episodes of playing Dark Heresy to your team.
First eight episodes.
How many episodes was this? Was it 8 episodes long?
38 in total.
Yeah, sorry, my first 38 episodes.
There we go,
38 recordings.
This next question is very relevant to that. So, this is from Hans from Germany. So, the episode started halfway through a campaign. Was there anything you wish was recorded from earlier sessions? And I think Og's probably got a good answer.
Line.
Yeah.
How did he get on the secure line?
That was my funniest thing.
Could you explain that for our dear friend Hans, as he's, playing Forklift Simulator or whatever Germans do?
The recordings start with us in the process of stealing a submarine.
Episode after you've stolen the submarine and dear Raph was absent.
That would have been good to have on as well.
That was such a cool session.
Orthamuel using his faith in the Emperor rolls a one, which in this case is great because it was way he could actually succeed and intimidates a submarine into working so he can escape.
That was also that episode where, like, I finally got... or I feel like you really understood, like, I'm okay.
Yes.
To RP not being there or not being, you know, involving myself outside of things and like.
Totally. Yeah. Yeah. It's fine. I mean, so the context for the episode before the game started was the party stealing a submarine from a manufactorum on the planet they are on. Lothar, Tora, and what's his name, or Famuel, basically snuck through some pipes work to get all the way up to where this factory was and just break in, stab a few guys, blew open a wall, jumped in the heavy bolter turret on the submarine and shot a few guys. Meanwhile, Emilia, in order to gather intel, got a job working at the same manufactorum, and so had a whole session of basically going, oh no, there are some people here stealing a submarine? Crazy! And it was fantastic, because she was able to do stuff like, okay, you've got these guards coming in here, you need to get ready for all this kind of thing. Like, you guys split the party, but it was really, really good. I think there's some stuff earlier on I wish was recorded. Obviously, I think for a lot of people, they'll jump into episode one and then go, Jesus, this is terrible, and then jump out. If I look at the
because it was recording, exactly. Only for Wrath to be able to hear it.
Yeah, I'm so special.
It's our special boy, and this is the reason this is a podcast that was invented by mistake. Thanks to Wrath, just like you. I mean, is there anything else that you guys wish was recorded that wasn't?
So
I would have liked to have the event with the blank have been recorded as well, because despite losing a player seemingly because of it, it was actually a really cool for everyone else character moment where it was we're not all on the same page.
Yeah,
I'd say we lost more than a player that day, but a friend. But that's actually not true, is it?
So we
lost a player that day.
There was a. I need to explain some context here for the boys and girls back home.
Yes.
Or looking at the viewer figures, the boys back home. So. We had an additional player.
Trans women are real women. Well, our opinions of the players don't actually match Warwick's opinion as the DM. Trans women are women.
Excuse me? Are you accusing me of being a TERF?
No, not at all. I'm just saying that my views don't entirely reflect your views, Warwick, but I believe with my whole heart that trans women are real women.
Do you guys remember that time Warwick said O.J. Simpson was innocent?
Wow. No, our viewer figures are overwhelmingly male, and we actually have more non-binary listeners than we do have women, which I think is a very, very cool statistic, and might be, I don't know.
Pretty cool.
I mean, some of the VPN stuff, I'll be honest with you, none of you guys are listening from Occupied Donbass right now. If you are, you shouldn't be listening. You've got bigger things to worry about than this podcast. Well, I'm going to see a massive drop in listeners after this one, aren't I? We had a player who we referenced a few times as Viridius, who was with the party pretty much from the start when we actually started this campaign in, I want to say, 2019.
Before me?
Yeah, it was pre-Raf. Raf turned up one session in with the infamous line, are you guys with the Inquisition? And then resulted in another tech priest getting shot. But yeah, basically, he made some in-character decisions which didn't vibe with the rest of the party. He did a lot of things that were very brute force, just swinging around the Rosette. He made a lot of out of character decisions that did not vibe with the party, and he is no longer with us, which sounds very malicious. He's alive, but you know,
he just stopped coming round.
He just stopped coming around, you know. But you know, good things happened. We got Og. Bad things happened. We got Og. So yeah, I think that's a fair question. So, next. Oh yeah, anything else we would like to have had recorded pre podcast?
First, I think Og, you were in the middle of talking about what happened with the secure line thing.
Yes.
Oh, yes. So on this fucking hellhole of a world, we went to this town called Scarbit, and Orthamuel had to have Warwick invent an incredibly good character called Quintessential.
You guys walked to the dock, and Raph just went, well, obviously, they'll have a dockmaster, right? And I went, yeah, but obviously they have a dockmaster. Obviously. Oh, it's so obvious. Why wouldn't I have invented the dockmaster for this session? So I had to improvise. So we came up with a guy called Quintus, and these guys decided his last name was Sensual.
I don't think that was us.
That
I
was.
Know, I definitely came up with that.
Yeah, check the tapes.
I'm proud of you.
That's why I want to know the whole Central family.
Yes. Yeah.
Is Sonny Central?
Sonny Central. And if he misbehaved, it'd be not essential.
You're unessential.
Not essential.
Black sheep of the family.
Yeah. Oh, God.
We discovered...
Unessential, come home.
Unessential.
Oh, dear.
When would you come back home, unessential?
Unessential.
I want to dance like unessential.
I don't know any other words that would end with essential.
No. Oh. Well, that's the last time I let you guys name a character.
I'm going to be calling a character unessential in one of my games. We discovered this grand conspiracy of, like, criminals, like... using fish to cover the import or export of like Necron technology,
yeah,
and Tora proceeded to botch really badly a bunch of roles, but more importantly, at a fish market, Warwick described offhandedly a child that was looking at Tora, yeah.
And like literally. I think you were trying to be subtle about something, and I think you fucked it up and turned around, and there was just a child a 5-year-old child who was there, just locking eyes with you, who was just shaking his head slowly.
No. And before this point, we had Tora tins of beans and some rope, or something, like string. And we were setting up camp for the night, and I'm like, I set up a communication network.
Mm.
And so he had this tin on him, and the two tins on him and the string. And I think proceeded to, like, in all good players fashion, hyper-focus on wanting to kill a child, and then roll so poorly on, like, 4 occasions. And at one point, it, like, Tora threw the other... baked bean tin, I think, to Lothar, so he could talk on the secure channel, ignoring the fact they had micro beads at the time, and then fucked that as well. So the child picked it up and went, hello, and I yelled at the top of my lungs to the point where my housemates had to ask if I was doing okay. How did you get on this secure line?
It was an amazing pun. It derailed the session. I loved it. I wish that was recorded, because it was fantastic.
Samuel just spent 40 minutes yelling at a priest. You yelled at the lowest priest you could find. You just started yelling at the lowest level priest you could find, and then started moving your way up. And that's what Samuel did for 40 minutes. It's like, it's not really a hearts and minds or a fact finding mission. It was we were like, oh, let's go find a mystery, and Nathaniel's just arguing with the clergy.
That entire thing, I was doing the absolute nothing to do with what we were going on with. Because I'd accidentally give Quintessential a business card, which I hadn't.
Oh my god! Yeah.
Canon, changed my real name from after giving them all fake names, and Warwick not so subtly telling us before we got there not to use our real names.
Yeah.
And then after we spent what felt like an entire session of us trying to fucking Goldberg machine this card out of this man's grasp somehow.
I think Tora just pickpocketed him, right?
Yeah, it was the one actual use of sleight of hand we've done in this stupid campaign.
I pickpocketed the data slate from Lane.
Yes. I think that session with the priests of just cutting back to Orphamuel as he was just yelling at
I was trying to be like a Karen Vista. I was trying to be like, where's your head priest? And he was like, he's not here. So I just went down on him. But that didn't go down on him.
That also had I think, one of the stupidest characters I ever made, which was the guy who hung out outside the chapel and said, can I have your shoes, please? With the intention of... basically, I said, it's a holy place, you have to be barefoot in here. And
but he was just going to steal the shoes.
He was just stealing people's shoes. So I think Orphamuel checked inside and was like, hey, these people are wearing shoes. And then he turned back around, this guy's running across the market, going, oh god, oh no. Which is such a stupid bit, but I enjoyed that. But yeah, that session was essentially you guys creating issues for yourselves and then dealing with them, which is my favourite kind of sessions, because I don't have to write anything.
In the terms of story arcs, what story arc was after Necron World?
Ben and the Magna.
Yeah.
The Magna, yeah.
So I view, in my mind, the Venator Magna was end of Act 2 for Dark Heresy. So Act 1 was all the stuff up to the Lamentum Canticum, which is a really cool session. These guys basically set up a psychic bomb that diverted a Tyranid High Fleet. It was fucking sick. End of Act 1. Later on, Venator Magna, I would say, with Act 2, and then obviously everything that happened up to the end of the session after that. Pretty much the bulk of the podcast, actually, about 30 episodes of it, was Act 3. So, yeah, it's kind of difficult because, yeah, we started pretty much halfway through a campaign. But I had a lot of fun.
I think I've got another one,
yeah,
too.
Yeah.
My first one would have been Wrath coming in and saying, like, you guys are the Inquisition?
Yeah.
And
10 out of 10.
But other than that one was when we were at Laris Station, which was before that.
Pre-Og.
It was pre-Og.
So that was, you guys got the Lamentum Canticum. You liberated it from a museum.
We did. It was when we first got there, and we got, I think, arrested like almost immediately.
Yeah, pretty much.
And then interrogated. And this is where Viridius had used the Rosette. We were supposed to like be really, really ideally undercover.
Lane sent a server skill to tell you off.
Yes, very much so. But I loved the, I wish it was recorded, the interrogations that they did. Each of the players separately got interrogated.
Yeah.
And asking Lothar about like which were, what was it, his most important like fingers, like how many fingers did he need to do his job or something like that.
Yeah.
And they were about to break his fingers. And I said, all right, I'll tell you, fine. All of them. I need all of my fingers for my job. Can you please let me go?
Yeah. That was good. I liked that.
Absolutely.
You know what that reminded me of was that thing is more or less the same arc when me and Critter went, I don't want to say the word undercover because we weren't undercover at all, but like we went together to try and get information. And I don't know why, but we just turned to be the biggest fuckwits you've ever seen, like challenging me and Og and Al-Jadar level of fuckwitsy.
In terms of we went fuckwits.
Oh, we were a bit.
We were.
But we got to, I can't remember what was about this guy's bed and breakfast or whatever. Oh,
it was a bed or breakfast. It was Bertram, and you murdered him.
It was Bertram's bed or breakfast, which is...
Okay, so what I want the people at home to know about is that we're going into this, we had a plan. And unfortunately, Critter may have botched a roll, which alerted Bertram of our plan.
It was a stealth roll.
Yeah. Stealth roll.
Then you fought with restaurants.
They were, they were trying to pickpocket keys from a bed or breakfast owner, and then Critter fucked it up. So the guy turned around right as he was reaching for his pockets and went, "Huh?" At which point, Orthamuel, I think you described it as like jumping off of the front desk and launching the Emperor's elbow down on him.
Yeah,
pretty much killed him immediately.
Over the table, and I didn't quite realize how much damage my character with his abilities and his stats could do in bare hand, as well as how much damage NPC. That was just a normal bloke.
An old man. You just fucking demolished him immediately.
We ended up like just actually shattering this person's skull. And
right, you did. That way,
well,
you did.
Nah, well, you were part of it as well. You can't hide behind.
You're reliable.
And I think to get rid of the body, I can't remember whose idea it was to put it in a carpet.
You referred to it at the time as the old carpet special. I think it was all family.
Special.
Yeah.
And then wrapped in carpet. I remember chucking him into his like a skip or a dumpster of the Americans. And then chucking in my flamer spare cartridge.
And bear in mind, this is in a highly oxygenated environment on a space station where they were given a pamphlet when they arrived, which was basically, if you smoke, you're going out the airlock. And Famuel's way of dealing with the body was wrapping an old bloke in a carpet and shoving him in a bin and setting him on fire, and which then caused like a massive crisis for everyone on the station, which is fun. That would have been fun to have recorded.
And also in that same set, I don't know, same session, that same arc, next part two of me and Critter trying to find some information was we've got some jobs at a local spa. I can't remember what my one was. I think my one was like an all rightish kind of.
You were a massage therapist, mate.
Yeah, I was a massage therapist. I managed to get some information out of like, you know, being a bit chatty, being a little bit charismatic. Mm. And Critter and his level of, I don't want to say the word autism, but his level of unsocial like contact and no eye contact and bad interpersonal skills.
All right.
Somehow managed to both relax and bore an old man so much in your group therapy breathing sessions that you just kick the bucket?
Yeah, I did a deep breathing thing. I did like a quote-unquote kind of made up, but it might be real, I don't know, like, I don't know, sniper's breath, if you will. So like, it's something to slow down your breathing and to control it in order to almost enter a meditative state before taking a shot, right? So did that, had a like awesome fellowship role, and Warwick rewarded me by having a really, really old guy in the back die of heart failure.
No, he died.
He was so calm.
He died of relaxation. You stilled him so much. His heart went, you know what? This is a good time. And just quietly slipped away.
It's terrible.
That was...
Fucking, or family wouldn't stop bringing up. I remember that time you murdered an old man on a fucking pleasure dome. I was like,
that
was
a point where you summit. I probably metagame that a little bit, because before that I didn't realize there was like an issue with your character and death. But I remember you saying something to Warwick, or Warwick saying something to you about how, as a person that's like not scared, like something about anxious about death, you didn't like it that much. You looking away, and I thought of my little fucking scurry head. I was like, oh, I could wind him up here, couldn't I?
Yeah.
Remember that time you killed that guy by being so relaxed, he just died in the back of your class. Everybody
yeah, it was
else,
good.
You watched that happen.
that was a part of fucking Lothar's. So when we made our characters, we had the option to. I think we had either an option to choose her, we had to roll for it, all of our different traits. And so Lothar rolled a thing where he never speak the names of the dead ever,
which is something like I think you kept up. Which I was really glad you did. It was awesome to see that with like the chapel.
I think you said we
that.
Could choose or roll. I think a lot of us just rolled.
Yeah,
just
totally.
Mm-hmm. It was a lot of fun, but yeah, no. So that's why. So I think it would have fit beautifully for Orfamiel of Orfamiel not knowing that and just continuing to fuck with Lothar. It makes sense.
Yeah.
So yeah.
It was good.
That was fun.
So we've got a question for Trok here. So why was Amelia opposed to using more metal cybernetics and sticking with body modifications?
You had a mix.
Yeah, I was going to say, Amelia had a mix of...
And I mean, literally because she was a geneticist, that's why...
Yeah, I think that's a simple answer, isn't it? Simple question, that's what you get.
Amelia, I never played... So... It wasn't recorded with BGZ, was it?
No, when BGZ was found, and the conversation with
early on
BGZ.
In the game, I was having her like struggle with, you know, oh, do I want to go fully into the augments and this and that and all that sort of stuff. Like, yeah, she might be a protect freeze, but like, you know, the lore is one way, but like putting a real person, a real character into that place, like, do you really want to like change yourself that much? And there was that moment with BGZ in the garden where she asked him about, like, you know, his augments and stuff, and he said, oh, it's, you know, no matter what, you still have the soul, and he kind of, like, eased her up. And at that point, I did start to do some more technological upgrades. Mm.
Yeah, I think Amelia had a really nice blend. BGZ's whole philosophy.
Tech upgrades came because of necessity. She had her eye shot out by an Eldar sniper. She lost her leg to a warp accident. The only one that wasn't necessary was she cut her own arm off to replace it.
Yeah, but you know, what's that between friends? That's cool. We put
the
gun inside.
Biological augments, really? What did she have? She had the anesthetic
teeth
steak
thing. You made. Stuff like you made the synth muscle for Tora, stuff like that. I guess you were mostly
like a medical biologist was the main
because some of the stuff
only thing I can think of is the snake bite.
You adjusted your hair color as well. You changed your DNA to you have like naturally
like
white
hair. And
like, yeah,
like
so
I
yeah
like
I think
that
you...
was cosmetic. It was no purpose to it other than looks so, and like changing up for the mission kind of thing.
Yeah. Bad question, Hans. You get a bad answer.
That's not a bad question. Fuck
you, Hans.
Then there was the touch.
That's true.
Touch.
Yeah.
The Bible's just very useful.
Yeah, it was. You freaked out a few people. Speaking of freaking out a few people, so all of these I've edited to cut out, you know, like, hi, I'm Hans from Germany and all that kind of shit. This one I'm going to read verbatim. Why have you cut out the requisition system and the dodge system? Dark Heresy 2nd Edition is balanced around these two things, and without them, the whole thing falls apart. If you wanted a more rules-like 40k system, why didn't you just play Wrath and Glory? My response to this is, fucker you, I do what I want. Secondly, Wrath and Glory wasn't a thing when we started this game. Thirdly, I think my colleague Og wanted to speak there a little bit.
No, you're 100% correct. And when you start pulling major functions out of a game, really kind of changes what you can and can't do.
Crazy that, isn't it?
I'm in complete agreement, and I brought this up several times. Yeah. I felt hampered, if not nerfed, because I was actually stronger. But I felt my combat was worthless.
Oh,
I feel pretty good.
Yeah, you're great. Yeah. That's why you're my favorite.
And I don't mean to say like I don't sound like cunt when I say this, but the most amount of fun I had combat was using the flavor.
It's great. Setting people on fire is always fun. But that's fair. I think it's something. This was the first. It's actually the first RPG I ever ran a game for. I played a lot of stuff before. I played D&D, a few other things like Mothership, and before running Dark Heresy. And I think Dark Heresy, particularly this second edition Dark Heresy in comparison to stuff like Wang, is very crunchy. That's Wrath and Glory for use at home. It's very crunchy. It's very rules heavy. If you want rules for blood loss based on limb amputation, it's got it in the book. I think as I've played, I've realised I enjoy running, and I think it's more fun for the players to take part in things that are more narrative and more rules light. So I think over time we gradually. Like, the requisition system didn't make sense to me because, like, you guys were moving from planet to planet rather than staying where you were. The influence system as well was something we dropped because why should your actions on one planet in one tiny town affect how you're treated at the Inquisitorium a few sessions later when you're, you know, other side of the galaxy sometimes? So, yeah, I think it's a fair question, and there were balance issues. But hopefully in the future, with other systems that we'll be playing, it'll be a little bit better.
It will be nice when we play Blades in the Dark to play the system as the Lord intended.
Exactly, as John Harper himself.
After we've played it for a while, then we can change.
Exactly.
It.
Yes, the real wide-open system of Blades in the Dark.
Yeah.
That we're going to follow to a T.
There we are. It's a good system.
Yeah, it is a good system.
I know we kind of passed the point when we were asking something that we were curious about, but it's in my head
No, go on.
One of the earlier pre-recorded episodes, we had a tidal locked planet, and you said at the time that the tidal locking was significant. Why was that significant?
That's a good question. So that planet, this is completely useless for boys and girls at home, but that planet was essentially using some big psychic shit where the planet was frozen both physically and in time as well, and emotionally. So essentially, it was a planet from the War in Heaven, and the weird goat people you met there in Stasis were basically like, we're pacifists, we can't deal with this War in Heaven, this is terrible, and essentially uploaded their whole species onto those weird glowing crystals, and then left 2 10-year-olds left, as basically the Adam and Eve, the Eternal Youths, and all that kind of thing. So the fact that the whole planet was essentially locked and frozen in that time was just the effect of this kind of psychic thing across the whole system space. Now, that was a while ago, and obviously, like, it turns out there are some hard and fast rules with space, which I wasn't privy to, but I am now, and I wouldn't dare say anything about galactic orbits or anything like that again. So I'm sorry, Raph, okay? Okay, moving on.
Is that actually it? I was fucking raging.
I'll check my notes and get back to you.
Because I was thinking it was something mathematical about the sun, and I thought you got really into depth.
Oh, no. Have that particular flavour of autism.
I have literally made sketches at the time.
Oh my god.
Why is it facing the sun? Because he was so keen to let us know it was tidal locked specifically, and I thought he's saying tidal locked, he's not saying anything else.
It sounds cool.
It must be something about. I was thinking about the moon was also like somehow involved. And I was like, maybe it's the moon. Maybe we should have gone to the moon when we were there, but it's too late now. And like,
I'm sorry. Right? Yeah, all those sleepless nights in the years since.
Just terrible. Like, God was too old. Really.
I'm sorry. So this question, I guess, is for Og. Did you know about Tora's uncle ahead of time?
So, like all good points from Tora's background. It was me and Warwick just kind of gossiping and shitposting in Discord at one another. And I think we'd kind of talk, we'd somehow stumbled upon Tora being this like tragic figure.
Yeah.
Really early on about how Tora thinks he's all this like hot shit, but it turns out he's just he has a traumatic brain injury and what
has
he
has basically constructed a reality for himself where he is this cool crime dude.
Yeah, exactly. So you then messaged me about, it's like, oh, by the way, on the next planet, Tora was picked up from this planet. So yes. When Lane hired him, it was from this planet. And I was like, can he have a contact on planet? And it ended up being, oh my god, what was his, Hale, what's his fucking,
Touchstone.
Uncle Touchstone, yeah. Yes. And we, for what is probably your morning versus like 3 a.m. for me while I was probably a little bit drunk, were just kind of like sitting gossiping about dumb shit.
Yeah.
And that's how it ended up happening. And I think a little bit collaborative because quite often we say the most fucked up out of pocket shit for Tora and then it ends up happening. Maybe not in the way I expect, but
I think that's it. Like we discussed, oh, his uncle's going to be there and you were like, oh great. Yeah. Yeah. His uncle that he thinks is a crime lord. And I remember thinking, yes, he thinks he's a crime lord, but that gave me, I think there was an initial moment, I think, where both Tora and Og both thought, hang on, is this guy undercover or is he actually not a criminal? And I think you had the realization in and out of character in unison that like, oh no, I've really got this wrong. Which was really fun for me. That's a good question. I like that one. Hans has written in, is Thalia Lane's daughter? No. I know we joked about it a few times. Lane is old as balls. Thalia is not Lane's daughter. So this is some stuff of Lane's history which you could have gotten from very, very bravely speaking to him, or basically speaking to Don Baraccio. So you found out from Lane that he had a wife or a sweetheart or someone from the Upper Hive on Delphis Prime who, you know, no one really knew, and he seemed to work to earn money. So basically with Lane, the statue that was in the garden of the scholarly looking woman with the flowers that were arranged by it was his partner Annette, who died when they were in their 20s. Both of them grew up on the Hive world of Delphis Prime. She had something that I worked out was like maybe something like leukemia, and he couldn't afford appropriate treatments for her. So he started smuggling drugs to get her what she needed, but it wasn't enough, and she died. That was the point he moved from like smuggling drugs to, right, I'm going where the big money is, Deep End, Zenitech, all that kind of thing. Got caught smuggling Xenom artifacts by Inquisitor, and then got recruited instead of shot. One of Lane's things is that he kind of felt like he had this life stolen away from him. He didn't think, oh, I want to join the Inquisition. He ended up in the Inquisition because he was a bloody good smuggler and then, you know, got caught. So the statue is kind of, in my mind, it was like a little memorial for the life he could have had with her, and the fact that, you know, now he is incredibly powerful, he could solve an issue like that in an instant with his funding, with his resources, but back then as a guy in his 20s he couldn't. It's one of the reasons he's not let himself get attached to anyone. That's the kind of thing I had, where he was like very kind of distant and didn't really have any family. But Thalia essentially was kind of a proxy daughter to him. So she was from a hive world, and Lane basically rescued her from poverty after she lost her arm in an industrial accident.
Is poverty worse than poverty?
Sorry, did I mispronounce that? Poverty. But poverty is provable poverty. There was evidence for it, which is even worse.
That's a government designation.
It's a government, the Imperium mandated state of poverty. That's your federal fucking poverty. Yeah, so she was in the heights of poverty. And yeah, basically lost her arm in... I kind of pictured it like those Victorian children who used to fix like machines in workhouses and kept losing limbs. I picture Lane literally grabbed a random child and was like, yep, that's it. Going to grab you and you're going to join the Inquisition now. Job done. So for Lane's perspective, that was kind of like Thalia was his chance to at least feel like he was doing something good. If he could bring one person out of an absolute shithole and go, you've done okay by associating with me. That was kind of his way of redeeming himself in his partner's eyes. Which, you know, none of that ever came up, but it was something that was at least always on the back of my mind with Lane's perspective. And I think that's the reason he was so taken aback by the flowers that Amelia made. That genuinely shocked me. I was like, wow, you've picked up on something I did not think you would pick up on. So yeah, that's Lane, that's Thalia, that's Annette, a few other bits and pieces. Now, this question is not directed to one person, so I guess we all answer it in turn. Again, it's from Hans, who said...
Can we answer it one word at a time?
No. Hans has asked, how did you get into 40K? I got into it through the traditional method, which is a guy in my year when I was... 12 years old brought in the 4th edition Space Marine Codex, which had the battle for a Macrag on the cover with Marnius Kalga and the Ultramarines Honor Guard. And I remember looking at it and thinking, wow, this is a real formative experience that is going to affect my life for the next couple of decades. Awesome. And loved it. He played Dark Eldar. He was very good at it. I didn't. And I was very bad at it. I bought the Assault from Black Reach set, and then I've been on and off with the hobby since then, really. What about the rest of you guys? How did you get into Nottingham's most famous export?
I've been reading White Dwarf since before I moved to Braidwood, which would put me about 7 or 8. Reading White Dwarf for 1,000 years. Played a bunch of fantasy, played a little bit of 40K as a child into a young tween. Put it down again, but was like the physical hobby, put it down for a while, just getting back into it. But lore-wise, I've always been a big fucking grognard.
Yeah.
So.
What about the rest of you boys? Or are you not really into 40K?
I was a Dawn of War boy, born and bred. I played the first one, but it was the Dark Crusade that really got me tipped into, who are these robot Egyptian guys?
That's like curious about these fellas that I think.
You are these really interesting pariah characters which I never heard of again.
Oh, don't, mate. I'm still sad.
Yeah, but no, yeah, there's definitely Dawn of War.
And I think that's a good entry point for a lot of people, isn't it?
Yeah, when we started, obviously Oculus started taking off and started playing games other than Minecraft. Or plot twist, in a boiler home, you're meant to do Minecraft.
That is our next question. it was, how did you all meet as you're from all over, which I've written.
Minecraft.
Yeah, we met in the most honest of ways in the noughties.
Shadows of, Israfel.
Yogg's Quest, wasn't it?
Yogi versed forums.
Yep.
Oh, yes.
For a Minecraft RP server called the Oculus.
And that was in like 2008, I joined?
Yeah, 2008, 2009.
Yeah, my virginity is still with me to
this day. Rath, is your virginity in the room with us now?
Honestly, I don't know where it is, but I know it still exists.
And at one point, we numbered multiples.
Yeah.
At our grand peak in 2011, 2012, The Oculus is a very good kind of analogy for the Imperium at large.
Yeah.
In 2010 to 2008 to 2012, of our golden age of having like 20, 30 people.
Yeah.
And now it is just the dregs who hang on for dear life.
Thinking of the glory days.
Thinking back to the glory days of the Imperium as Trok, entombed in his silver throne, who's always in the team speak. He never leaves.
He never says goodbye.
He never says goodbye. He just goes to bed and he leaves himself in the team speak. Yeah. And then goes, oh, no, I'm here. It's like, yeah, but you haven't been for the last 7 hours I've been here.
He's our eternal lord.
Our eternal lord and savior, Trok. Every time his internet goes out temporarily and he disconnects from the TeamSpeak, it's a very important event.
The Astronomicon flickers across the world.
We have to log into Minecraft at the same time and kill a certain amount of villagers to bring Trok back in as well.
So yeah, that's...
I remember back when the old gods walked the world before Trok usurped the throne.
Yeah.
The old... it's actually not that bad. There was a jester.
There was a jester.
Yeah.
Thinking of Eldar gods. Who was Cain?
Probably Luneth with his fucking YouTube video that never kicked off.
We're getting into ancient lore now.
Right. Very importantly, me, Warwick, and Wrath were... lied about our ages, and we're all about 13?
12, 13, yeah.
I was always quite open. I was 13.
No, but you had to be above 16 to make a post to get accepted to this Minecraft roleplay server.
Yeah. And then 16 to get the Yogiverse.
Yeah. You were 13, but you looked about like 36 because of the amount of drinking that you've done in your life. That everyone just went, oh, yeah, fair enough. He must be old. So yeah, that's how we met, was through Minecraft RP, and look at us now. So
Warwick had the cringiest Facebook chat to each other.
I know, back in the day. So back in the day. Critter, how did you get into 40K?
Through Dawn of War 1, and then Winter Assault. I fell in love with the guard and
assaulted someone.
What's it? Yeah, in the winter.
Was any heretics?
But no, fell in love with and sentinels and just wave upon wave of infantry and things. Yeah. And then it fell off for me for a bit, because I'll be real with you, in the days, in the before times when I had it, I didn't have the internet to be able to look up and see that Warhammer was anything outside of that game. I had no idea. So then I met you guys, and then after a lot of wikis and now models and things like that, here I am.
Yeah.
So... yeah,
I think that's a good point, actually. I think if you're from the UK, I think where I live, there's an equal amount of kebab shops, vape shops, and games workshops. Like, it's very hard. I don't think you're allowed to be a city in the UK without actually having several games workshops. So
a cathedral and a James.
It's very different over here because it's literally all over the place. Whereas, yeah, I guess in the US, it's very different. Trok.
Yes, it's the US that's different.
Yes. Trok, how did you get into Martin Titterdale's miniature citadel?
Jimmy and the Space Marines.
Jimmy and those Space Marines. Has he slumbered upon his throne? Oh, no.
Yet again, the Ancient One sleeps.
Oh, no.
No, I was saying, I used to play a lot of RTS, like Command & Conquer and all that. And Warhammer was just one of those games that I would play.
Yeah.
Friends would even bring computers over to our house so we could do LAN parties. We left the game, like, I remember one time we even left the game running because we were all playing IG against, like, whatever enemies. We had such a huge, like, battle line that was impenetrable. We left to go, like, get Burger King and come back, and the game was still going, and we were still holding the line. We used to play that like crazy. Like, I knew there was miniatures, but I never really cared about that. But I knew, like, so much of the lore randomly because of the video games and, like, stupid videos online.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, I feel like we got into 40K, all of us, at, like, the... you know, before it was cool, before your Henry Cavills and your Emperor had a text-to-speech device.
Oh, yes, the Emperor had a text-to-speech device. It's so cool, Warwick.
It's so cool, you know, for the kids today.
I used to read 1D4chan because I was a 14-year-old on...
I was, 14, you know. On,
slash me.
I
slash
out
PG, sorry.
Yeah, thank you. Yeah. How dare you misspeak my home board. but yeah, so that's... those all the questions we had sent in?
Tell us about the Sensei theory. Warwick.
Oh, back in my day. Well, so this is how I learned 40k lore, which is going into an actual Games Workshop and some guy going, oh, do you want to play 40k? And I go, yeah, sure. And he goes, cool, I've got Grey Knights. Is that okay? And I go, what's a Grey Knight? And he goes, well, and then he info dumped on me and for like 45 minutes. And I was like, I don't understand anything that you said. And then lots of long summer holidays trawling through wikis. And here we are. So those are all of the questions we had sent in by our dear German listener.
Yeah, a lot of questions.
We've got one listener, but God, he loves the podcast. so we have had a few people asking what we're doing next. We've mentioned it a few times, including Og in our last session trying to invoke the stress system from Blades in the Dark to try and weasel out of some roles. Next up, we are going to be playing some very silly one-shots. So probably Honey Heist, Orc Ball, maybe a few others. I hear Everyone is John is good. After that, we're going to be playing the fantastic RPG Blades in the Dark by John Harper.
Is that the John that we all are?
No, yeah, fuck it. Everyone is John Harper is what we'll play just beforehand. he's actually given me, I dropped him a message on Twitter and said, hey, can we use the Blades in the Dark logo for our stupid podcast? And he went, yeah, I don't care. So we've got explicit permission from Mr. Harper himself. So thank you, John.
I genuinely thought you meant explicit you messaged other John.
No. He has no copyright control. Blades in the Dark is about a crew of daring scoundrels seeking their fortunes on the haunted streets of an industrial fantasy city. Think Dishonored, Thief, or Victorian London with just slightly more ghosts. Also, the sun has exploded. I hope you enjoy listening to it whenever it comes out. Thank you for listening to this absolute train wreck of a podcast.
Should we practice our accents for it?
No. I refuse.
They piss on the boy.
I will not indulge this. So I am sorry the audio is so bad, for something that started by accident, thank you, Raph, it is really lovely to see so many people listening. If you enjoyed it, please tell your friends. If you didn't, tell your enemies and waste their time. Thanks a lot, and we hope you enjoy us. We hope you join us for more nonsense in the future.